Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Wednesday, May 6th. I'm Olivia Rose. The State Department of Fish and Game announced in April that the estimated commercial salmon harvest this year is about 126 million fish. That's less than two-thirds of what they ended up harvesting last year. As Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports, a biologist who manages the state's commercial fisheries isn't concerned.
Every year, state biologists predict how many salmon can be commercially harvested in relation to expected run strengths. It guides how they manage the state's fisheries, like when and where they open and for how long. This year's expected overall harvest is much smaller than what was expected last year, like nearly 90 million fewer salmon.
It's not particularly concerning to me.
Forrest Bowers heads the state's Division of Commercial Fisheries. He says there is inherent uncertainty in the forecasts.
Keep in mind, this is a projection. You know, the accuracy of the projection varies across the state, particularly for stocks like coho salmon. They are very difficult to forecast. Chum can be difficult to forecast as well.
Still, 90 million fewer salmon than predicted last year? That huge gap mostly boils down to one species, pinks, also known as humpies. Their two-year life cycle is the shortest of all salmon. And for whatever reason, their runs in Alaska are far smaller in even-numbered years. Pinks are the most commercially harvested salmon. Last year, they made up about 61% of the total expected commercial harvest. This year, they make up nearly 44%.
The difference is 64 million fewer pink salmon.
The other salmon species, king, sockeye, chum, and coho, make up another 77 million fish in the expected harvest. The biggest part of that is Bristol Bay's robust sockeye or red salmon fishery. It's the largest sockeye fishery in the world.
Roughly 80% of the sockeye harvest in the state, 80% or more, has been coming from Bristol Bay.
Managers expect a commercial harvest of about 32 million sockeye in that fishery. It's a smaller forecast than recent years, but Bauer says it's still strong compared to the fishery's history. King or Chinook salmon is the most valuable salmon species, and Southeast Alaska accounts for the lion's share of commercial harvests. 166,000 were commercially harvested in the region last year. Bauer says those runs are trending in the right direction. Last year, the Taku River near Juneau had the best king return in over a decade. Still, it remains on the state's Board of Fisheries Stock of Management Concern list, along with the Stikine River, King Salmon River, and Andrew Creek. That means fisheries associated with those waterways are more restricted.
But overall, you know, things are definitely looking better in Southeast Alaska for Chinook than they were, say, 6 or 7 years ago.
Most of Alaska's commercial salmon fisheries run from June through September, depending on the location and the targeted species. Last year's harvests across the state were valued at about $541 million. Reporting for Coast Alaska, in Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Wrangell's Borough Assembly is weighing whether to give its school district an additional $150,000. As KSTK's Colette Zarnicki reports, the debate comes with an uncomfortable catch. The state won't give as much funding if the borough pays too much.
Alaska's school funding formula creates an unusual dynamic for local governments. The money a borough contributes to its school district can actually reduce what the state is required to give. For the next fiscal year, Wrangell Public Schools has a base funding target of $4.1 million. If the borough pays over the allowable maximum of $1.9 million, the state contributes less to meet that target and the borough is fined. Essentially, it's a balancing act, and the borough ends up filling in for the state. While some school districts in Alaska are facing teacher cuts and school consolidations, Wrangell is not in an immediate crisis. But at a late April joint work session, assembly members and school board members still faced a difficult question. How much should the borough contribute for the coming fiscal year? Chief Financial Officer Christy Andrews says the borough can give up to $949,000 above its required maximum contribution without triggering a reduction in state funding. Beyond that threshold, the state's share shrinks.
It's the required local effort that the state offsets. Any additional allowable contribution from the city is truly extra, and that's really what helps us. So you could give us up to $949,000 in additional revenue without any penalties from the state.
Compared to a year ago, the finances are looking up. Last year, Andrew projected the district would end this fiscal year with just under $54,000 in reserves. The turnaround is largely thanks to a $700 per student funding increase from the state last year called the Base Student Allocation, or BSA. Enrollment gains and careful spending also helped, she says. Next fiscal year, the district is projecting 258 students enrolled, with six receiving intensive special education services, one fewer than this year. That reduction means slightly less state funding coming in.
Everybody remember, the adopted budget had a fund balance at the end of this year of $53,907. Right now, we're expecting our June 30th fund balance to be over $1 million. That's good. That's really good news. That's outstanding.
Superintendent Joshua Garrett says that $1 million cushion helps manage risk, but it still doesn't allow the district to plan proactively or invest in its future. He points out that districts across Alaska are budgeting without knowing what the BSA will be, sometimes until months after the fiscal year has already started. On top of that uncertainty, the district is projecting a $563,000 budget deficit for the next year. But the district is hoping for a one-time state funding increase of between $200,000 and $350,000, plus an additional $150,000 from the borough.
How am I supposed to plan as a superintendent? Because that's a huge difference. One is, hey, we got a 3.5-year runway. Or we got plenty, and now we can really do some things in this district. I don't know any business that can run off of a $500,000 deficit year after year after year.
Garrett says the district is already stretched thin, staffed below minimum levels, with no room left to cut. A media literacy librarian position that had been posted was also pulled from the budget. The district is also absorbing a 2.5% increase in health insurance premiums, a 10% increase in property and liability insurance, and an additional $10,000 for busing costs the state will not cover.
We still need the state to figure out a long-term solution for adequate, actually beyond adequate. How about excellent funding for schools in Alaska?
The minimum contribution the city and borough of Wrangell is required to make is roughly $957,000. The district is asking for the maximum, $1.9 million. They submitted that request May 1st, and the borough has until the end of the month to respond. In Wrangell, I'm Colette Zarnicki.
As the Juneau Assembly moves forward with ending the city's involvement in Eagle Crest Ski Area's controversial gondola project, they're now trying to figure out what to do with the parts. At a meeting Monday, the Assembly asked city staff to terminate the project and sell its equipment. The Assembly voted last month to divest from the gondola project and pay back a $10 million investment from Goldbelt Incorporated. But that hasn't been decided yet. The Assembly will take a final vote on May 18th. The project's price skyrocketed to over $37 million due to additional parts, high construction costs, and tariffs on imports. In 2022, the project was estimated to cost under $10 million. City Manager Kate Kester says selling the gondola's parts and equipment would recover some money, but not nearly all of the $11 million already spent.
It anticipates a recovery of $1.6 million, but a timeline of 2 to 3 years to get there, mostly because selling the gondola parts will take time and we will have to hire someone to do that business.
Right now, the project's parts are scattered across thousands of miles. Some of it is in Juneau, there's some equipment in Austria waiting to be shipped over, and the gondola cars are in Colorado being refurbished. Assembly members also discussed what to do with the ski area now that the gondola project is likely not happening. Since its purchase, the gondola has been touted as the saving grace for the ski area, which has long struggled to stay financially afloat without city subsidies. The Assembly is considering whether to subsidize Eagle Crest for the next fiscal year. If it doesn't, the ski area will likely not be able to operate. They're also considering having a third-party entity take over the ski area. Juneau's Assembly will tackle those decisions as it finalizes the city's budget in the coming weeks. The online marketplace Etsy plans to ban products made out of fur as well as threatened or endangered animals. While many Alaska Native artists say they do not use the platform, several said they were frustrated with the decision. Alona Naden with the Alaska Desk has more.
Cheyenne Nelson pulls a pair of earrings from a box stacked with her creations.
So these are otter.
Nelson is Aleut and Tlingit and is an owner of Iliamna Arts based in Anchorage. She is a self-taught artist and uses fur from otters, rabbits, lynx, and foxes to make jewelry. She sells her art to customers from California to Chicago and from Canada to the Netherlands. But this might change. Etsy emailed artists like Nelson in early April to notify them it will ban fur products starting August 11.
It was like the worst case scenario. To have that taken away is such a bummer. I really liked being able to have my art reach people that in no other way it would have reached.
The new Etsy policy says it will apply to fur from animals killed primarily for their pelts, like mink, fox, and rabbit. It says the ban will also pertain to products made from whales, seals, bears, and other threatened and endangered species. The policy says the goal is to conserve animals that are most vulnerable. It was not clear how the company would establish that animals were killed for fur and not for sustenance, as is often the case for Alaska Native people. There don't appear to be exceptions for Indigenous artists whose rights to harvest animals and create traditional crafts are often protected by federal law. Etsy did not respond to emailed questions for this story. Many Alaska Native artists contacted for the story said they don't use Etsy to sell their creations. But Nelson and several others say the new policy will disproportionately harm Indigenous artists.
You've ostracized the entire Indigenous population that wants to share their art through Etsy.
Nelson says that if Etsy rolled out the policy with meaningful exceptions for Indigenous artists, she would have more respect for the decision. She's not sure she wants to continue doing business through Etsy. Jamie Newhawk Stallings is Yupik and Athabascan, who now lives in Idaho. Stallings makes earrings, cuspooks, and other clothing using fur and feathers from her family's hunts. She sells her art at local markets as well as Etsy. Stallings says the Etsy fur ban discriminates against Native artists who rely on fur to make money and treat animals with respect.
Historically, there's been a lot of shame put onto certain parts of our lives, like our language, and now it's fur. We don't disrespect animals whatsoever. In fact, we have the highest regard for animals.
On Etsy, Stallings often takes custom orders, sometimes to account for customers' allergies, and sometimes to make something unique for special occasions like weddings, anniversaries, and graduations.
I just did one this year that went to Georgia. She messaged me on Etsy and said, can you do a custom order of coyote fur pom-pom earrings, but make them really, really big?
When Stallings was small, she was a part of her father's Indigenous dance group. She remembers performing in the Anchorage Native Heritage Center to a crowd of tourists. Between the performances, she would sit with her mom at a table, selling earrings and talking to guests.
Earrings were the one thing that we were able to share with people. I really love that, being able to connect to people from everywhere. It's unifying.
Stallings says that she originally felt a lot of anger toward Etsy for its new policy. But now, she hopes the ban can motivate Indigenous artists to come together and create their own platform that sells traditional art on their terms. In Anchorage, I'm Alona Naiden.
For KFSK, I'm Olivia Rose.